And welcome back after the break here for the second and final hour of Cancel the Cabal on Revolution Radio, PSN Radio, and APRI Radio Network. My next guest here is very widely known on the internet to millions and millions of people. He has lots of followers. His website is thecrowhouse.com. I don't really need to introduce my guest and bring up a bio or anything because so many people know so much about him, but I want to welcome Max Egan to the show. Welcome, Max.
Hey, Stephen. Nice to be on again, brother. Thanks for asking me.
Well, thank you. This is my third time in a little over 2 years of broadcasting, though, having you on, and you are just a plethora of information. I think we will concentrate mainly on one of your biggest passions, and that is Israel and Gaza. And I am only going to interject every now and then. I'm not going to ask a lot of questions because you pretty much know what you're going to say on that subject there. So I would like to give the floor to you with very little interruptions, Max Egan.
Well, in regard to Gaza, I mean, Gaza is really the greatest moral dilemma of our time. It really is. It's been called this by many people, and that's truly what it is. Even Jimmy Carter was just recently there, and he said the situation in Gaza is intolerable. And it's gotten so bad since the war last year. Well, they call it a war. It wasn't really a war. It was just an invasion and a bombing and an ethnic cleansing. But, you know, I think Gaza provides us an opportunity, Stephen. I really do. I think it provides us an opportunity to rein all of our governments in because it's a war crime. It's an open war crime that all of our governments are supporting. And, you know, people are dying. Millions and millions of people are suffering. And all through Palestine, not just through Gaza, but through the West Bank as well, due to the actions of Israel, apart from the surrounding countries. I mean, Israel has been a very aggressive and very destabilizing force in the area for a very long time now. And it's doing so because it's receiving funding from all our governments. So I think, you know, we've got to pull funding from this. And we've, you know, really, when you look at the situation in Gaza, it comes down to us cleaning up our own backyard. That's the only way we're going to be able to alleviate the situation. I mean, obviously, Israel isn't going to do anything about it. They're going to maintain the siege and maintain the blockade and keep squeezing these people until there's none left. And so it's up to us to put pressure on our own governments to stop supporting this war crime because it is a war crime. Just the fact that Gaza Strip exists is a war crime. I mean, collective punishment, it's a war crime under the Fourth Geneva Convention. And people will argue that, say, oh, look, they voted for Hamas, they get what they deserve. But really, I mean, most of the population didn't. Over half the population is children, and over half the adult population are women, and none of those people voted. So, you know, it falls flat using that argument. You know, it's collective punishment, it's a war crime of massive proportions, and it's a humanitarian crisis of massive proportions. I think what we need to do, people have to stop looking at it as being an issue between the Palestinians and the Israelis and just realize it's a humanitarian situation. Now, that's what all these situations are, brother. They're all humanitarian situations, same as what's going on in Yemen, what's going on in Syria, what's going on in Libya after what we did to that country.
Yeah.
These are all humanitarian situations, but we view them, you know, through their you know, ethnic, you know, parameters or through their political parameters or legal, whatever. But really, it's all humanitarian, and that's the problem, I think.
Yes, I think you're right, Max. I think it's more of a control issue myself, Max. They need to control the media, and they need to control the propaganda, and the internet seems to be their biggest enemy. They pretty much made their own Achilles heel available to the American public.
Well, I don't think that they expected people to have the nous that they've got. I think they expected people were a lot more cowed and there wouldn't be as many voices standing up and calling things for what they are. I don't think they realize that people won't be locked into a corner so easily. I really don't think they thought that was going to happen at all. I mean, the internet, it's been their Achilles heel, but it's also given them the means by which to locate all the activists. So it's a double-edged sword. All these things are double-edged swords. I mean, they track everything that happens on the internet, so they know where all the people are now. And yeah, it's been a good thing, and it's been an interesting thing. It's been great for us to connect. It's been a great tool, and we've managed to get a lot of information out to people. But you know, they do know where everybody is as well. So you know, we need to really start looking at the way things are going and the direction things are going and start trying to create some sort of unity with the truth movement. This is what I've been trying to do for so long is get people to put all their stuff down, get out of their rabbit holes and turn and focus our attention on this system, because the system is the reason all these rabbit holes exist, you know. If we can put a little bit of transparency into the system, establish some sort of control over it, you know, put the politicians back into their proper place in society, which is public servants, you know, lead ourselves back to a point where we've got a bit of freedom, all these rabbit holes will open up, you know. And Gaza gives us an opportunity to do that. I mean, because it's an open war crime that's been supported by our governments, I mean, if international law is supposed to mean anything at all, then this gives every country, all the population of all these countries, it gives all the people of these countries an opportunity to rein their governments in for supporting this war crime under their own fiction, under their own legislation, you know. And it gets the attention of the people, and that's the only hope the Palestinians have got, is for the world to wake up, because the other only hope they've got is resistance. They can just sit there and resist as long as they can. But with constant Israeli aggression, I mean, in another 5 or 6 years, you won't be able to live in Gaza Strip anyway. It'll be too polluted. It'll be too... You just won't be able to. You won't be able to survive there. The amount of depleted uranium that they've poured onto the place, the polluted water. There's no water flowing in there. There's dysentery. There's disease everywhere. Not one home has been built since the bombing campaign last year, where they bombed it for 51 days, wiped out some like 17,000 homes and killed 2,000 people. It's like over 10,000 people still homeless from that war. Actually, I think it's more. I think it's probably 100,000 people still homeless from that war. And not one house has been rebuilt. No aid has got in. Nothing. It's ridiculous, you know.
Isn't there virtually 1.5 million people living in the general vicinity of, I don't know, say a smaller city in America here, or a smallish type city?
Well, it's an area that's 5 miles wide, 4.5 to 5 miles wide, and 25 miles long. There's 1.8 million people, and most of the homes there have been reduced to rubble. So in amongst that area, there is 100,000 homeless people, you know, living in shelters and tents, and there's just water. Israel's been allowing sewage to flow in there. I mean, the sewage plants are overflowing. They can't get past to fix the sewage plants. They've got a wall around three sides of the country and a naval blockade on the other. And people say, oh, well, the Arabs should just leave. Oh, they're Arabs. They're not Palestinians. They're just Arabs, and they should leave. But they can't leave. They're blocked in there. It's a collective prison. And Israel needs it as well. I mean, Israel needs Gaza there because it tests its weapons on these people. It goes in there and tests abominable weapons on these people to see how they work. And it also provides the constant threat that Israel needs to cry victim all the time, so it can keep pouring weapons into itself and keep developing weapons and keep attacking everybody under the guise of self-defense. And if it wasn't for the people in Gaza, yeah, they wouldn't be able to do that. They wouldn't be able to cry victim all the time. So it's a political football for them as well, you know.
Certainly it is. Every single government on the planet has to have a bogeyman to cry foul when something happens.
Well, yeah, and Israel just places itself above all international law. It really does. I mean, it's broken so many UN sanctions. It's broken so many humanitarian sanctions and humanitarian rules and so many international laws. It just doesn't care. And our countries still support it. That's the problem, you see. So we've got to put pressure on our own governments and stop buying Israeli products. I mean, the boycott, sanction, divestment program, this is great to a degree. It shows solidarity. I mean, it doesn't really do much while the United States is giving them $7 million a day anyway. So, you know, not buying their products doesn't really help. But it does show some sort of support. But, you know, it's got to be pressure on our governments. We've got to realize that this is an open war crime, and it gives us the opportunity. Like, if your government, you're not happy with your government in America or Canada or wherever you happen to be, and you can't think of a way of reining these people in, well, point out to the people that your government is carrying out war crimes. If it's supporting the continued occupation of Palestine, the continued siege of Gaza Strip, then it's supporting war crimes. And that gives you the ability to rein your governments back under control using this as an excuse to do it. So this is what I mean by it provides an opportunity to people. And we could do that and get control of our own governments, and we could also alleviate the suffering of the Palestinian people at the same time, if the people would show a little nous and get up and actually do it, you know?
Yes, I absolutely do. I want to digress just a little bit, and well, not so much digress, but the psychological term comes up, cognitive dissonance, and it comes up a lot in alternate media. Millions and millions of Americans and millions and millions of people all around the world seem to have this psychological affliction, and they just don't want to see their government as the bad guy.
Yeah, I know. It's a worry. It's the training, you see, the training we get at school. We're trained to respect authority. We're trained to believe that the big guys at the top know what they're doing and they'll look after you, and you're just a little guy and you can't really do anything. And you shouldn't question them. You shouldn't question authority. And, yeah, they wouldn't do the wrong thing by you. Of course they wouldn't. They protected you. They saved you from people like Adolf Hitler and all the terrible people in the past, all these big boogeymen that, you know, would be there if it wasn't for our governments protecting us, you know. And the world is so dark and dangerous out there that we need them to protect us. Without them, oh, my God, what would happen, you know. So this is the kind of mentality that's bred into people. And they don't want to believe it. They don't want to think that their enemy might actually be in the gates, and that the people who they have elected to manage their infrastructure for them might actually not have their best interests at heart. You know, I would suggest that they open their doors and look around a little bit. Just go for a walk around the street, and you're going to soon find that things are not the way you thought they were. Unfortunately, people have a television education. They lock themselves into their houses. They work very hard and run on the treadmill to collect as much stuff and paper as they can. And they go home and they turn on their televisions and they get in their little safe zone, and they get reassured by the TV that it's all okay and the government is going to look after them and that Obama's the good guy and all this sort of stuff. So it's just programming, Steve. It's a difficult thing for people to break out of, but it's scary for a lot of people as well, because cognitive dissonance means everything I thought was okay, and everything was right, and everything I did was good, and it's all okay, you know. If you break out of that, then you're sort of thinking, well, hang on, everything I did in my life up to this point may have been completely meaningless because I may have been looking at the world from the wrong perspective. And this is terribly confronting to a lot of people who have gone through 30 or 40 or 50 years of life and to realize that they've been looking at the world from the completely wrong perspective, that everything's completely different to what they thought, and that they may as well start now because everything before that point was meaningless, you know. So it's a big thing for a lot of people. It's a huge shift in perspective.
It is, Max. A lot of people really don't like self-scrutinization. They don't really like to admit that they were duped or they were conned. And maybe just, I don't know, I haven't studied psychology a lot, but I think maybe people just don't want to admit to themselves that they've been wronged, and they just want to keep the fallacy alive.
Well, it's a fact of, you know, not only the fact that they've been wronged, but if things really are as corrupt and bad as what people say, well, what can I do about it? What's the way out? You see, they get lost, they get scared. They don't know what to do. I mean, you mean, now that I know all this, someone isn't going to come and save me? You mean I actually have to participate myself in my own life and save myself?
Yes.
You mean I'm responsible? No. It says in the book here that a savior is going to come, or that it says in this book that a comet's coming, and it says in this book that the world's all, everyone's going to ascend. Something's going to happen.
Yep.
Something's going to happen. I don't have to participate. I can know all this, but if I keep my focus, the world's going to change for me. That's the problem with a lot of people. They just don't want to participate. Oh, my God, you mean I'm responsible for myself? No. I never learned that at school.
Yes, that's right. I had a conversation about a year or so ago, Max, with a pastor in my local area. I approached him to see if I could do some talks in the church in that on off religious days or whatever. And he said, no, we can't do anything like that, Stephen, because God's going to save us all.
Well, that's the thing, you see. They don't have to participate. No one has to participate. You just do what it says in the book here, and you keep your head down, and someone's going to come along and save you. You're going to wake up. It's going to be in the newspapers. You're going to say, oh, look, the world was saved. Stephen Roberts saved the world with his radio show yesterday. You didn't have to do anything. That's what it's all about. Even with a lot of the movements people join, you know, join the Zeitgeist movement, you get the newsletter every month, and you think, one day I'm going to get a newsletter that's going to tell me the whole world's changed. I didn't have to participate. But you do. Everybody has to participate. And you've got to, you know, wake up to reality, but realize that it's about you. It's all about self-responsibility. That's what we're here for. There are no leaders on this planet. There is nobody that has any more value or any more worth than anybody else. all of the perceived value, the monetary value, this is just stuff we made up. So it isn't really relevant. But, you know, human value, you know, the value of who and what you are and what you have to offer this species, you know, through your thought and through your creative potential, this is something that we all have in common, something that we all have equally. And we all have the ability to affect positive change. We all have the ability to question authority, to not comply with anything which causes us to deviate from our moral compass. And that's what it's all about. And if we do that, we can change the world. You know, if we all suddenly started obeying our moral compass rather than our legal dictates, then we would change the world in a day if we all started doing the right thing in all that we do. It really is simple. But people are just too scared because they're too scared of the consequences of doing the right thing. I mean, how bizarre is that? We live in a world where there are consequences for acting morally and doing the right thing and disobeying the dictates of others, which may cause harm to people. It's pretty backwards. It's pretty upside down. But just even seeing that for what it is a huge awakening for people, you know?
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's all happening. I mean, they're trying to lock it all down, and it's getting extremely bad, and things are getting extremely dangerous, especially for people like us. But I don't think it can last. I think the more they do it, the more people are waking up. I'm seeing people that I never even thought would waken up, just waking up in droves. So
yeah,
that's very reassuring.
Yeah. I've got a friend from another network, Max. I'm sure you probably know him. You've probably had shows with him. Vinnie Byrne over there in Ireland. He said on a show just a few months ago, back in December, that well, I'm going to use the word you metaphorically. He said, if you can be ordered or told to do something against your will, against your moral fiber, then you are the problem.
Exactly. That's it. People are too willing to deviate from their moral compass on the dictate of somebody else. You know, it's bizarre. And that old experiment they did, I can't remember what it was called, where they had a guy in a chair.
Yes.
Being asked questions, and they had someone giving them electric shocks.
Yes.
If they got a question wrong, and it kept going, and he would actually give them a lethal dose simply because he was told to do it. Oh my God, I have no choice.
Yes.
It's incredible. I mean, you just got to wonder what has happened to human consciousness that we would do this. You know, we are so ordered, we're so molded, you know, we're born as complete individuals, and we're stuffed into a mold, and we come out as these clones. It's absolutely amazing. And it's psychological and mass mind control. You know, the whole planet is under mass mind control. Even the fact that, you know, heading for a global economic crash, the fact that they can switch the value of paper on and off. You know, one day, if the bank crashes, people will wake up and they'll look in their wallet and they'll go, oh my God, all of this money in my wallet is now just worthless paper. But it was before. It was just worthless paper before they switched the value off. It's just that they had value. They'd attached value to it. But they can switch that value on and off in your mind. You can wake up the next day and say, well, now it's just useless paper. But hang on, we could just close our borders and we could still pass it around to each other because all the infrastructure is still here. All the trucks are still here. All the produce is still here. We could keep the system flowing and continue to pass this worthless stuff around to each other the way we have been for the last 100 years. And we can figure a way out of this mess while we do it. But no, because we've switched the value off, the whole machine has to stop now and everybody starves. It's amazing. It's mind control. The whole thing is mind control. And that is an amazing thing, how they can just switch the value of paper on and off, and people just wear it. People just buy it, and they see it one day as having value and one day as not. And it's just paper anyway, you know?
Yeah, well, not so much the paper also, Max, but the so-called precious materials, gold, silver, platinum, other types of things. They are intrinsically valueless themselves.
Well, yeah, you can't eat them. You can't eat them. The only reason they're of any value at all is because they're noble. I mean, they're noble metals. They don't rust. That's about it. But ultimately, they're pretty useless. Gold's a pretty useless metal. You can't build tools out of it. And it's good for electronics and all that sort
yeah,
of stuff.
Yeah, but it's the best computer there is, yeah.
Yeah, but if we weren't living in an electronic age, what is the value of this stuff, really? You know, the Mayans and the Aztecs used it to make their gutters and all the metal on their roofs and stuff out of because it was really easy to bend and mold. And but that's about it. You can't really build out of it. It's quite decorative, but that's about it. So you know, the only reason it has a value is because it's noble. It stays in its same state, you know. So you can put a piece of gold there and 100 years from now it won't be rusted away. So that's about it. But yeah, ultimately, it's just the value that we attach to things, you know.
Well, certainly. There's quite a bit of a worldwide movement going around, Max, that people are trying to get back to the barter system for their trade, for their so-called, maybe the, instead of the monetary system, the barter, work for what you want.
Well, that could work, you know, if people were willing to work, if people were willing to go and put their effort into it. You know, unfortunately, with the barter system, a lot of people simply don't have things to barter. I mean, a lot of people don't have the skills that may be needed, so you end up swapping things, and it can get, you know, kind of messy. I mean, we had tally sticks for years, and they worked. The tally sticks, there wasn't a problem with tally sticks.
They did.
Anything, I mean, paper would work. Anything would work. If we're going to have money, anything would work. But to have this interest-based money system that we've got, this debt-based money system, this is completely counterproductive. That's the problem. Is the debt-based money system that we've got. I mean, if we're going to have money, anything would work. Doesn't matter what it's made of. Doesn't really matter how it comes about. But having a privately run system that is debt-based, where people profit simply because you're using their money, this is not acceptable. This is what's created the scarcity, and what it is, and it's all artificial. The whole state of scarcity on this planet's artificial, and it's causing us to destroy the planet. It's causing us to trash the environment and render the place unlivable. And so there's other ways of doing things, much better ways of doing things. I mean, I'd like to see us wean ourselves back to a state where we don't need money, but it might take a little while, it might take a generation or two to actually wean people off this stuff, because it's an insidious mind control program. Once you introduce a money system over people's minds, they find it very, very difficult to even comprehend a world without money, how anything could function, you know. But it would function quite well without money. But people just can't see it. So it's finding a way to break that mold and break that program. It's even, I mean, I'm an anarchist, basically. I'd like to see a world without the state, a world where there were no borders, a world where people governed themselves. But again, it's a process. You've got to get people back to a point of self-governance. If you just brought down the system now, it'd be chaos. There'd be wars. There'd be gangs take over. It'd end up like Libya in every country, you know, because that's just the way it'd be. There'd be powerful factions, and then the powerful would prey on the weak. That's just the way it is. So you've got to wean people back to a state of anarchy and self-governance, the same as you've got to wean them off this addiction to paper and to money.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. I think people need to also look at their moral fiber. The monetary system today is basically based on ego, and it's not really based on more or less performance. Somebody that can think that they're better than someone else thinks that they deserve more than someone else.
Well, yeah, it's an interesting thing. You know, you value your worth, and you place your worth on the possessions that you have, and by the digits and the numbers you've got on the screen and the amount of dollars you have in the bank. It's ridiculous. It's not real at all. And that's not what makes you valuable. That's not what worth is. That's not what success is, you know. So we've been given this misconception of all of these things, and we judge ourselves accordingly, you know. And that's a difficult mold for people to break out of as well, you know. The whole concept that we are our possessions and we are our things, you know, but we're not. It's not about that. It's about, you know, your health and your the value of your friendship. You know, friendship, I think, and having loving people around you and a good network of like-minded souls. This is wealth. This is real wealth to me, you know. And success is having these people and having these strong friendships. This is success. But we're taught that success is to go and work within a company and work towards these certain parameters. But really all you're doing, you're working in a company and you're trying to make the company successful. So what you're doing is you're minimizing work costs and maximizing profits. So basically you're discarding people and making the system more efficient. And in this way, we've constructed our own system because we've entered into this corporate business world. And we've worked to be successful, in inverted commas, but really we've just made the system more efficient, and we've discarded more and more people along the way. And then we get to these points. I mean, I know some quite wealthy people who've got to these points through the whole corporate empire, and now they're very wealthy. They own land all over the planet. They've traveled everywhere, and there's nothing there. It's an empty life because it isn't about dollar value. It isn't about stuff. It's about who you are and the relationships you've established along the way, the people that you've helped, the smiling faces that you meet when you go places. This is what it's about. This is success, you know. But we were taught that it was not about that. It was about improving the system. And we were given this misconception of what success actually was. But you get there, you find there was no personal success in any of that. It's not about your stuff. You can't be measured by your things. You need to be measured by your heart. You know, the old Egyptian adage of when you die, they weigh your heart against a feather. You know, the heart needs to be lighter than a feather. Because you're a giving person. You're not heavy in your heart for all the bad stuff you did. And there's a lot in that. There's a lot in these ancient wisdoms that we could learn from, I think. And that's what it's about. It's not about stuff. And it was a trick. It was a lie. We were sold a lie. And a lot of people are waking up to that now. And that's why it's so difficult to address this system, because it's the system itself that is the problem. It isn't the people working within it. The people have been trained to work according to these parameters, and they know what they do. They say, well, I have no choice because it says here on this piece of paper that these are the rules. But it's just an idea. Someone just wrote that down on a piece of paper. What's in your heart? That's what you should be doing, is what's in your heart. You know, and that's the problem. We've lost that. But people are waking up to it now. The question is it too late? I mean, I hope we've woken up in time. I still think we can rein this system in if enough people come online and enough people stand up and make a bit of noise about it. But we're certainly we're working on a knife edge at the moment, that's for sure.
Yes, absolutely. I got just a short story to share with you, Max. There's a smallish type community near me, just 4 or 5 miles away. I can drive across one of the county lines, and there is approximately, I don't know, between 8,000 and 10,000 people in these small communities. They're nearly gated. And I know a lot of workers that have a lot of contracts in these small communities, and they've told me in the past that between 35% and 40% of the homes that are occupied by families don't have furniture in them. They don't have food in their refrigerators. But they have a $400,000 house, which is quite a lot here in America, especially in this area. But they have $70,000 cars out in the driveway, but yet they don't have two nickels to rub together, and it's just an illusion.
Well, yeah, and you find they probably bought most of this stuff on credit anyway, and they don't own it anyway. So
exactly, yes.
That's the thing. You know, all it does is it gets them in debt. Now you're tied to this spot, and you've got this car that in another 5 years it's just going to be an old car. You paid thousands and thousands of dollars for, and you can't really own anything anyway. I mean, it's just a temporary existence. You're only here in a temporary existence as well. And, you know, the house is just temporary accommodation. We don't build anything to last. So you have these whole communities of people that are just there in locked into a situation of debt slavery, tied to a certain place on the earth, and now they can't leave. If there's no work in that area, well, what do? They can't travel around the world. They can't go and meet people. They can't go and discover themselves because they're locked into the system. And they've just got to go and work in this factory and drive their $70,000 car to work every day and come home and stay in their empty house every night and watch their television, and that's probably all they've got in their house is a television and some blankets to lean on against the wall. I mean, that's what you get in a lot of these places. But, oh yeah, I'm on my way to success. This is the American dream. This is it. I'm going to have the house and the white picket fence and the 2.4 kids, and every day is going to be perfect, you know. But it's a lie.
Yes, it absolutely is. I thought I would... it's funny, you mentioned a couple things a few minutes ago, Max. I wanted to digress a little bit and speak upon the military and the police. I think some of the things that really are a big problem, as I mentioned, if you metaphorically can be ordered to do something against your moral fiber or your will, then you are the problem. I think a lot of these people that are in militaries and police have the illusion that this nice shiny black suit that they wear, or this shiny badge that they have pinned upon their chest, gives them special powers. And a lot of them, they will just outright tell you that they're not allowed to do the things that they do without this shiny suit and this shiny badge.
Well, yeah, and it's a big boys club as well. And it's an interesting thing, you know, like you get a society and like we've got, and you take all the rights away from people and you squash them into a box and you shatter their consciousness. And then you get people like the police and you give them a little bit of power over other people. And their egos kick in, and they kind of like that because they've had everything taken from them, you know. So they kind of like to have a little bit of power over others. And unfortunately, it's turned into a big boys club where they know that they can kind of get away with anything they want to do. I mean, some of the violence we've seen from our police in recent years has been absolutely horrendous. And it was recently, I can't remember what state it was in, but there was a guy running away from cops. He might have been on horseback, I'm not sure, but the cops ended up catching him. And they just all ran, there's six or seven of them, and they ran there kicking him and jumping on him and punching him and just really, really beat this guy up badly. And then there's an investigation to establish whether there was any misconduct, was what they're saying. We're trying to establish whether there was any misconduct and whether any of these police officers acted out of line. Hang on, we've got it on video of them running up and kicking this guy in the head. You're asking me if there was any misconduct? You need to investigate this? What about the video? I mean, here we've got police just basically acting like a bike gang. And that's what we've got, unfortunately. So you get these big boys clubs and people, even the good guys, you know, in there who may not want to hurt people. If they don't, they find that they get ostracized by their peers. They end up being on the receiving end. And so they sort of come into line eventually. And it's just turned into this massively corrupt system of people who know that they're above the law, because they know the law is fiction. They can do whatever they want and get away with whatever they want as long as they've got that uniform on and they believe that they are their uniforms. And I would suggest that also the electromagnetic equipment that they wear sets them into these you know, aggressive mental states. They're always covered in all of this stuff. They're always covered in sigils and black magic sigils and all this sort of stuff as well. I mean, uniforms do things to people. All you got to do, if you're out there, if you're a listener, just go to an army disposal store and go in and try on a uniform. Just go in there and put one on. You feel different when you're wearing a uniform. You got all those sigils and things all over you. You just feel different. So uniforms do a certain thing. They set up an energetic state with people, and it causes people to act the way people in the other uniforms are acting. It's just the way it is. It's another mind control thing. It's quite interesting the way it works, but it's an energetic exchange, you know?
It is. Doesn't it harken back to a more ancient way of thinking, that somebody that is dressed up more flashy and more physically appealing will have a bigger physical presence, or maybe just a more powerful presence, if you will?
Well, yeah, we've been trying to respect authority. We've been trying to respect these things. We've got Aboriginal activists here in this country. I can't remember what they've got, but they were going and protesting at Parliament House and doing all sorts of stuff, and one of them put on a uniform, and it had something written on it, you know, Aboriginal something rather of society, of Australia, you know, and it looked official. A little emblem on there, a little hat. And he would just walk in there and start ordering the police to stop harassing these people, and the police would do it. They'd do what this guy said because he had a uniform on. Didn't matter that it was his own uniform that he'd made up himself and put his own badges on, but he'd just go there and do it because it looked official. Okay, you respect uniforms, no problem, I'll make one for myself. And he's an Aboriginal guy. He used to go and say, well, I'm of the such and such Aboriginal Affairs Department, which is a thing he made up himself. And he would always take control of the situation. So it's an interesting form of mind control, but we've been trained to do this. A lot of it comes from school, comes from a lot of the stuff that was instilled into us in school, but also the sigils, the energetic sigils and the energy fields that they set up when you're wearing a uniform. You put certain stripes and badges on it, certain logos, and it just affects people in certain ways. It's why they put them everywhere, I think.
I think you're absolutely right there. I think a lot of these people and the higher structures of the police and the military, they probably realize this and know this, and there's a story out there that Mark Passio told one time that Caesar happened upon one of his top lieutenants, Max, and this top lieutenant was teaching a slave how to think. He was teaching the slave about logical fallacies and reasoning and logical thinking. And Caesar scolded his top lieutenant and said, "How dare you teach a slave how to think? How dare you teach a slave how we think?"
Well, yeah. It's a dangerous thing. They don't want people to ever to be able to think for themselves, because as soon as you do that, you realize that there is no more value in anybody than anybody else, and that we're all equal and that we all have a way out of this, and you start getting self-responsible. And they don't want that. That's the last thing they want. And that's what we've got here, is a slavery system. And the whole society is based on slavery. It's all based on debt slavery. And they don't want people thinking outside of that box at all.
No, they absolutely don't. A lot of this same discussion came up on the first hour, Max, with my first guest. And I almost thought you might have been listening in, but I kind of figured that you weren't. But there's just so many reasons why people should think for themselves. The biggest reason is if people get together and start talking and working things out, these people will immediately become irrelevant overnight.
Well, that's the thing. They will. It's a fictional system. That's the hard part for people to understand, is that we're working within a fictional system. You know, all of the problems that we see on the planet, all are a result of fiction, all of it. You know, government legislation, that's the whole thing. Any problem that you've got, whether it's Fukushima, whether it's homelessness, whether it's starvation, whatever it is, wars, pollution, all sorts of stuff, all of these are a result of government legislation, which is happening because of a disunited and disempowered population. People who don't believe they have any power. But unfortunately, like we said earlier, people don't really want it. They don't want the responsibility. They don't want to get up and have to do anything. You know, like, they're kind of drugged down and they're slowed down. They're fed all these toxins and they're fed all this electromagnetism by the television, and they're tired at the end of the day. And they'd like the world to change, but just can't somebody else just do it? I just want to kind of sit down for a while and just relax and watch TV and just let me know when it's all done, will you please, you know? That's kind of the attitude that we've got, and it's very unfortunate. But we could change the world very, very quickly if people simply started doing the right thing in all that they do, just adjust their moral compass and question any authority which causes them to step outside it. That's how we change it. And that's the only way we're going to change it. And we've been given every opportunity to do so. But if we don't, I mean, if people aren't willing to step up, if they're just going to sit there, even with what's coming, you know, sit there in fear and not participate, then they're just part of the problem. What I'm trying to do actually this year with Full Circle Project, something that I've got to go over to Spain to try to organize, is get people motivated into doing something. With Full Circle Project, we want to create pockets of resistance all around the planet, small groups of people that are all interlinked, so that we can all share our ideas and start initiatives on the ground in our local communities, whether it be permaculture, whatever it is, something that's going to push the envelope with your local council and is going to involve your local community in something that's really good and positive for their community. But like I said, we'll push the envelope with the local council, so it'll also demonstrate to the local community that the council doesn't really have your best interests at heart. We have to sort of reestablish some control over these systems, you know. So yeah, that's the whole thing. We've got to regain control of the system, Steve. We really do. But it's got to come from grassroots action by the people themselves. It's the only way it's going to happen.
Yeah, something that actually gets us out of the system, whether it's putting a little garden out in your backyard or a little aquaponics building, you know, just something that is basically a greenhouse for people that live in cold weather areas like I do. I would definitely love to get the type of money to build up a little aquaponic shed where I could grow my own food year round.
Yeah, well, that'd be good. Anything that's going to involve your community and involve your neighbors, we've got to break down the barriers with people. You know, we need strong communal responses to everything that's going on. You know, it's the only response we can really have that's going to be effective against government. It's got to be communal response. You need the whole community to stand up and call things for what they are. That's why I've been urging people for so long to do whatever you can to break down the barriers in your community. Get to know people. Get to know your neighbors. Get to know as many people as you can, because, you know, we need to be able to stand up against this when it comes down. And it is coming down. There's a lot of really, really bad stuff going on. There's a lot of stuff coming down the pike that we're heading for a very, very interesting couple of years, I think, Steve. So you've got to have a strong communal response to all this. It's the only way we're going to be able to combat what's coming.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right, Max. And I think people, I stress all the time that I think people need to self-scrutinize. We actually need to look at what we actually need to survive in this world. Do we need the big flashy houses that are basically empty with the nice flashy car that you can't afford out in the driveway or garage? Or do we just need to be able to have clean, good, edible food and clean water and shelter?
People. Yeah, well, that's a big part of it, brother. That's what we need. You can't eat silver and gold. I mean, it's all good, but you can't eat it.
On the garage either.
Exactly. So, you know, we need to pay attention to our local surroundings, and you've got to have strong neighbors and strong ties with your community as well, because you don't want these people coming and just ransacking you if it all does go down, you know. So, you know, you need to have these gardens spread out and all the people involved, all the people of your community involved. If your council's putting you in jail for collecting rainwater, put your council in jail for telling you they can't collect rainwater. These are public servants. They can't tell you you can't collect rainwater. If someone comes along and says, oh, look, you can't have that water because I wrote down on this little piece of paper here that you're not allowed to do that. I mean, you've got to look at him like, what is this man saying?
Exactly.
You can't do that. I mean, all of this stuff. People, you've got to have a strong communal response to all of this sort of thing. And we've got to realize what government is. They can't tell you what you can and can't do. They cannot tell you you can't grow your own food. That's a God-given right to everybody. You can't collect water. What is this? Water is the stuff of life. If anybody's attempting to control water, then they're committing a crime against humanity. That gives you an opportunity to you know, take some legal action against them. So yeah, this is the way we've got to look at things. We've got to start turning the tables and putting humanity back at the top of the food chain and realizing that government are our servants, and we don't have to do what they say, they have to do what we say.
Yes, yes, precisely. I think people just need to look at these so-called officials and see them for what they are, nothing but thugs that...
Yeah, you've got to look at what the laws are, Steve. I mean, you can't have someone putting laws in place saying that you cannot collect water. I mean, what is this?
Yes.
How can anybody say, oh, it's the law now? Well, no, you've got to look at that and say, well, hang on, if someone's actually claiming this is law, this man's in abuse of office.
Yes.
This is an abuse of office. It's an abuse of power. Water is the stuff of life. You take water away from someone for 3 or 4 days and they're dead. It's as simple as that. So anybody who's saying that this stuff needs to be controlled, this guy's committing crimes against humanity. And take him to The Hague, whatever. If you don't have, if they put in legislation in your country that says that he can get away with this, well, let's go higher up the food chain and figure out who put that legislation in place and take them to The Hague too, because this is not acceptable. And until humanity is prepared to stand up and call things for what they are, it's just going to continue. But you've got to call it for what it is. Stop acting within legal parameters and start acting according to moral parameters. It's immoral to tell people they cannot have water. This is not acceptable. A few years ago, it wasn't even, 10, 15 years ago, it was illegal to sell water. If you went into a shop and asked for a glass of water, they had to give it to you. You couldn't sell water to people because water is the stuff of life. And then bottled water came out and they started selling water in nightclubs and things. And it's now been sort of changed, and now it's socially acceptable to sell water and to view water as a commodity, something that can be profited by, something that is valuable, has monetary value. It's ridiculous, you know. It's just a complete shift in consciousness that's happened over the last probably 20 years.
Yes, it has, Max. That's actually, it's kind of ironic you happen to bring that up, that the last couple of decades here now, that some of these top elite families that they are investing in land that is rich in water tables, water rights, or whatever. They are just hoarding this water up to use water as the next weapon. Use water. Well, they say that water is going to be the next gold.
Well, yeah, water is the most valuable resource on the planet. It is. It always has been. Just people haven't recognized it. It's just stuff that's there. It just comes out of the tap. It's everywhere. But it is. It's the most valuable resource on the planet. You've got people like the Nestle company buying up water all over the planet. And like in California, in a state of unbelievable drought, and they pumped, 700 million gallons of water into frack wells in the last 12 months while the whole place is struggling under drought, you know? Yeah, it's absolutely terrible. And it's all been done by design, I think. So this is how they can depopulate the Western world. They can just make it unlivable. And it'll come back. I mean, nature will recover. Things will come back to normal. Once we stop messing with things, it'll come back to normal. But they can just make the place unlivable, make it so that, you know, Western countries, you can't function there as a free and open society anymore. It's just not possible. And that's the way they're going to do it. I mean, I don't think there'll be any big declaration of martial law or any of this stuff happen unless it comes to the point where there's a financial crash and they have to declare martial law to try to stop riots and looters and all sorts of stuff. But ultimately, the way they will fix Western countries and control Western countries is they'll just make it impossible to live there so that everybody has to move and we can just open the whole place up for mining. And that's where we're heading, I think. Your country and my country, all Western countries, I think.
Yeah.
We're seeing the end of Western society. I think it's served its purpose. The elite constructed Western society to create a fearful society that viewed everything that was not part of Western society as a threat to Western society. And so we need to go and put military bases all around the world so that we're safe from everybody. And now all this is done. The elite have got all their military bases in place. They don't need the West anymore. They don't need these useless eaters, these sheeple as they call them. They just want a control system. They don't care who runs it. Doesn't matter whether it's America or England, China. They don't care who runs the control system as long as it's a control system and they're the ones who run the people who run it. So that's what it's all about. I think that we're seeing the demise of Western culture now, and over the next 10 years, we're going to see massive changes in all of our countries. We're going to see the populations greatly reduced in all of our countries, not because people have been killed, but because people can't live there anymore. And I think the world's changing very much, Steve, but there's a great awakening happening at the same time. So, you know, my great hope is that we will see it all as opportunity to call things for what they are, and we'll stand up and create something new that doesn't depend on economics, you know. That's my great hope out of all of this. It'll be a rise in human consciousness that'll lead to something better.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right there, Max. I'd like to take this last 5 minutes, maybe five or six. I just seen a friend of yours, probably one of your best friends, pop up online there a few minutes ago, Ken O'Keefe, and you happened to mention just last week in the Skype message that you are going to be heading over to London. Are you and Ken going to be doing some more things together?
Well, yeah, I've got to go over to speak at AV6, which is an event that Ian Crane is putting on about 70 miles out of London, I think, somewhere near Manchester. He's putting on an event called AV6, which is the alternate view number 6, and I'll be speaking of that with Ken. Ken will be there, Zen Gardner will be there, Ian Crane, Lady Samantha Backman that I'm traveling there with. A lot of good people, a lot of good speakers there. It's good to see Ken. I always like hanging out with Ken. I catch up with him whenever I go to London. And that's who got me into Gaza Strip in 2012. And I got some press TV stuff I've got to do while I'm over there. They want me to go on to the debate show while I'm in London so I can access their studio. So there's a bunch of stuff I've got to do while I'm there. And then I go from there to Spain to launch Full Circle Project. And I'll be home probably mid-June because I've got a bunch of speaking dates I've got to do around Australia between then and the end of the year. But the big hope is to launch Full Circle Project and hopefully get Ken involved in that, get as many people involved as possible. But Ken's a great guy. He's a valuable activist. He's made a great contribution to the awakening of the planet. So, it'll be good to see him.
He has. He actually has a lot more fame and a lot more notoriety over there in Europe than what he does here in America. And he was born American and he was born here in America. But he's been a big Gaza activist, as you happen to mention. The first time I ever heard of him was in 2009. Which ironically was the first time I ever heard of you and the first time I ever heard of a lot of these things when I started being a researcher, studying these people that are in control. You've been over to Gaza, two or three times in the last two or three years, Max?
No, I've only been over there that once. I've been trying to get back in ever since. I've been trying to get back in there since last October. I've got a ticket here open, ready to go, but I just can't get in. it's been impossible to get there. I'm in contact with people from Gaza. Like, I speak to them almost every day. I speak to people from Gaza at least a couple of times a week. So I've got a lot of friends in there, and I'm hoping for an opening to get back in. I mean, I've been trying for a long time, but it's very, very difficult to get in, especially since the last incursion.
Yeah. I guess some of the things that aren't really allowed over there is political activism. We didn't mention...
Well, yeah, and things like cameras. They don't like cameras to go in. And, I mean, there's lots of things aren't allowed over there. Water, you know, sanitary, toilet paper, Texacolors, A4 paper.
Concrete, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, crayons, yeah, a lot of stuff on the banned list. You know, it's incredible. You know.
They're not even allowed to rebuild homes or schools or anything over there.
They're not allowed to do anything, you know. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely absurd.
It is. It is. Well, I want to give you the platform here for the last maybe 2 or 3 minutes, and then you can give out websites or any other type of activity you'd like to give out.
Well, I'd really like people to get involved in Full Circle Project. It's going to be a very interactive website launched within the next few weeks. I'm trying to get a video done to launch it. I had so many audio problems. I had to build a new computer in the last couple of weeks, and now I've got it all going. I can't get my audio recording program working, so it's just wonderful. But anyway, there's all sorts of things that are delaying me, but we want to launch Full Circle Project by the end of June and get people involved in that. So I urge people to go to thecrowhouse.com, my website. You'll see a link there to the Full Circle Project. As I said, the website is being constructed now, but you can go and sign up for the project anyway. And this is something that's going to be grassroots movement right around the world. And hopefully it will be something that makes a difference, because we need to construct a movement that isn't a movement. It's grass fires. It's a movement of people without a leader. You've got to lead yourself. If you're not prepared to lead yourself, then you're not going to make any difference. And we all have the ability to do it. We all have the ability to make some change if we want to get involved. And there's enough people now that want to do it. The only thing that's really lacking is a workable tool or a workable mechanism by which they can coordinate. And that's what we want Full Circle Project to be. So I urge people to get involved in that. Go to my website, thecrowhouse.com. You'll find everything you need to know there, everything about me, all my radio shows, everything on the website's free. I've done 6 films. They're there. They're all free. I'll be back on the air probably by the end of June. I was going to take time off the radio, but I realized I'm just going to have to keep it going for a while yet. So, I urge everybody to go there. The Crow House is a great resource. There's over 1,000 pages there. It's all free. It's probably about 1,600 pages on that website now. So there's a lot of information there. There's a lot to share. And do get involved in Full Circle Project, please.
Yes, absolutely. And I certainly appreciate you coming on. And how long do you plan on being over there in London, Max?
Well, I'll be in London for a couple of weeks. I've got other things I've got to do in Europe while I'm there. And I've actually got someone that's flying me to Peru, because I've got some stuff I've got to do in Peru as well.
Okay.
So I'll be home probably mid to late June. I should be home. Back on air.
Well, I'm going to have to shoot Ken O'Keefe another message and see if I can get him back on soon. I know it's been, close to a year since I've had him on. But I think both of you are doing just a fabulous job, Max, and I hope that you can keep safe and doing all the things that you do.
I'll always be safe, brother. It's all good. It's all part of the ride, you know, and no fear anyway, brother. No fear. We just do what we can.
All part of the movie, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Thank you once again for coming on, Max Egan.
My pleasure, Steve. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, everyone. I'm going to end this show about a minute or so early. So I will let Hawk or whomever wants the stream, they can have it. I'm Stephen Roberts. I'll be back next week, Sunday, on Revolution Radio, PSN Radio, and APRI Radio Network. And see everyone real soon.